You know, some people think that I tell my story to get praise or to, you know, be on the news or be on shows like this. And you don't realize how difficult it is to become so vulnerable and to open your family up to that scrutiny. But I know how important it is, because when a news segment airs, I get hundreds and sometimes thousands of comments and messages and people who are suffering in silence. And they tell me how much inspiration they get. And so I don't want my struggles and everything that I've suffered to be in vain. Like, I really believe that God gives people struggles and trials to overcome them and then to be that hope and help to other people.
And a Safford City Council member is suspending his campaign for Congress.
A Safford City Councilman has suspended his campaign for Congress after suffering a heroin overdose.
His name is Chris Taylor. You may have actually know the name very well. It's been very publicized here in the Arizona media and the Arizona press.
Chris Taylor was running for the Republican nomination to challenge Democrat Tom O'Halloran this November.
And tonight, Chris Taylor says he is seeking treatment for substance abuse.
We first met Chris Taylor in 2017 as we dug in on the opioid problem plaguing the eastern Arizona city of Safford.
In a previous campaign ad, Taylor opened up about his struggles with opioid addiction after two tours in Afghanistan.
Taylor, a veteran who fought off addiction to open his own treatment center, was poised to be the success story for Safford. But he went backwards as old demons resurfaced last week. A relapse that resulted in an overdose. In a statement to suspend his congressional campaign, Taylor was very direct, saying, quote, "I'm not going to hide from this. I'm not ashamed of what happened. I wish to sincerely apologize to the amazing people who have supported me. It's a haunting reminder of a dark past that will always be looking over the shoulder of a bright future."
All right, everybody, welcome to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. I am your host, Chris Taylor, and I just wanted to make a quick little segment about, I've been meaning to do this, but now that she's been sworn into office and we've already seen Twitter has now suspended her in her first week of being a member of Congress. She's already threatened to bring articles of impeachment against Joe Biden in his first week or first day of office. Of course, I'm talking about somebody that you've all heard about, whether you're on the left or on the right or in the middle. Her name is Marjorie Taylor Greene. No relation to me, even though, you know, Marjorie Taylor, Chris Taylor, we're not related, but I do have a relatable story. It was July 2019, and she had just announced her candidacy. I had just officially announced my candidacy, and we both found ourselves as two up-and-comers, I guess, or at least two candidates that had caught the eye of the conservative right kingmakers, they like to call themselves, the powers that be. We were in Washington, D.C., and I was kind of on the early tour of all of the super PACs and all of the, you know, the big wigs. I had an interview with One American News with the Capitol in the background on top of a skyscraper there in front of the Capitol OAN headquarters with Neil McCabe. Neil McCabe is actually a very nice man, very nice guy, veteran, paratrooper. So we kind of hit it off. At that point, I wasn't even really aware of because I hadn't even really ever watched OAN or listened to anything. So I didn't really understand. I didn't even know that they were staking their ground to the far right of even Fox News. But it was the biggest interview that I had had since I had announced my candidacy. And I'm one that I would never turn down any, I'll never turn down any media interviews, because I think that, yeah, you know, they might try to catch you and take your words out of context, or, you know, you never know how the producers and the editors are going to make the segment feel. But, you know, I was open to any and all media hits. And so anyway, before that, though, I was in Washington, D.C. for a week, meeting with the who's who of, you know, donors and people that I needed in my corner to win a Republican primary, and to, you know, be well funded and well supported and have the network of fundraising and everything else. So that week I had met already with the incoming at that time House Freedom Caucus chairman from Arizona, Mr. Andy Biggs, Congressman Andy Biggs. I met with Congressman Paul Gosar. We actually had a very like an hour long meeting, and a very intimate meeting between the two of us. And he seemed to be very, he was a very nice and personable guy, very smart, very, you know, very well versed on all of the issues, and he was very kind. And during my campaign, before I suspended my campaign, we had found ourselves at numerous different Republican clubs around the state. And I would speak, and then he would speak, or he would speak, and then I would speak, and he would give me tips and pointers, and just a very nice guy. And of course, when I suspended my campaign and the news about my overdose and relapse and all that, Congressman Gosar was the only Republican of any consequence or any name recognition, or really any Republican at all, that publicly came to my defense and my aid. And so, you know, I don't agree with the way that he's gone about this last year. I don't agree with many of the things that he does, but on a personal level, I will always be I will always be grateful for him and for what he did for me personally. I don't think that just because you disagree with anybody politically or rhetorically or anything else, that you can't have personal relationships. And anyway, back to why I'm talking about this. So those of you who are involved in politics, the politicos, if you will, know who Grover Norquist is. He's the chairman of Americans for Tax Reform. He's a board member, or was a board member, I'm not sure now, with the National Rifle Association going bankrupt. Anyway, he's been a power player in Republican politics since Reagan. I mean, he was a young upstart political activist, consultant, whatever, with Reagan. Then with Bush, Grover Norquist is the guy who has a stranglehold on the whole, every Republican member of Congress or the Senate that wants to run for office. Before they get there, they go and they meet with Grover and his team. You sign what's called the tax pledge, the No New Taxes pledge. And at last count, I don't know if there was any Republicans in Congress that hadn't signed that pledge. And if you don't sign that pledge, there's like a whole network of conservative kingmakers. They like to call themselves that. And they kind of really are, because their endorsements, their network, their donor network and their fund, you know, campaign funds are going to make or break a candidate. And Grover Norquist has a group of activists, very powerful group of people. There's like 10, 12, 15 of them that sit around this conference table in a office building near the Capitol. And every Wednesday at lunch, They have about 100 different, 100 of the most powerful and connected people in the Republican and conservative, particularly the far right wing of the party. Karl Rove is known to go there a lot, especially during the Bush White House days. Who else? I mean, anyone who is anybody in the conservative political arena is there every Wednesday. And what they do is, it's like a you have to get slated on the roster, on the that agenda, and everybody gets like 2 or 3 minutes. Whoever's presenting, it could be a group of a PAC that's setting up, a group that is trying to push some sort of legislation, just an advocacy group, and then around the political around the campaign season, there are a select group of potential House members and Senate members that are hopeful and running. They don't just let anybody go in. You have to pass their muster of some sort. I think they look at if you even have a chance in hell of winning. If you have that it factor. I don't know how they do it, but I know that there's not every person who runs for Congress gets invited to Grover Norquist's lunch meeting. And so on this particular day, it was right after the 4th of July, it's probably the 7th or 8th of July, 2019. I found myself in that meeting with millionaires, billionaires, Grover Norquist, just all kinds of people that are constantly on cable news networks, people just with connections and that make or break a young candidate. And I was nervous, because I've never been involved in politics at this level. And here I am, have about 2 or 3 minutes to sell myself, to give a message that, are these people going to watch me? Are they going to back my campaign? Are they going to support me? This is, even though it's early, it's July of 2019, the election, the primary is not for another year, August 2020, but you get out there early, you make a name for yourself, your campaign catches fire, and you're the person to beat. And that's kind of where I was at that point in my race. And so there was only two candidates on the agenda that day. There was about 30 or 40 other different organizations and different movements, and everybody always has something going on, right? There's some kind of advocacy. They're advocating for this piece of legislation. They're the world's going to end if this piece of legislation passes. There's all kinds of stuff at this. And this is right. I was there in Washington, D.C. when Congressman Justin Amash, who was the one of the founders of the House Freedom Caucus, basically Grover and his team's golden boy, right? Like they had a lot of stock into him, into his political future. And he had just wrote in the op-ed that he was leaving the Republican Party, and that he could not, and that he was, couldn't support the president, couldn't support all of this nonsense. QAnon was starting to make a major splash, all of this stuff. And so that was big going on. So like I said, then there was a representative from the Libertarian Party there that was trying to win over some of these people. They wanted this particular person was there to advocate for backing for Justin Amash to be the Libertarian nominee for president in 2020. And I don't think these people had the backing of Justin Amash. They were just there. There was like a draft Justin Amash organization that wanted, and they were there at this Republican meeting, and they got some claps, they got some boos, they got whatever. One thing that is I do know about Grover Norquist is that he lets anybody. George Soros has actually been rumored to have presented at this meeting sometime in the past couple years ago. So, you know, they are open to people talking. The one thing you have to have is some clout, right? Or you have to be a candidate. If for the candidates, you have to be someone that they think stands a chance and that they are interested in. And so this particular day, the only candidates on the agenda were myself and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Sort of a obscure, at this point, candidate. She had just announced her candidacy for another district in Georgia, not the one that she actually ended up running for and then winning, but another, I can't remember what district she's even in or what district she was running in for in the beginning. But it was me and her, and they had everybody else go. And then at the very end was the candidate's turn. It was kind of a shift in the meeting. And here are the two candidates that we have today. They kind of did a quick bio on both of us. And then the bright lights were ours. I think I went first. And I talked about who I was, why I was running, and kind of my path to where I thought that I could win, and talked a little bit about the district, how it was an R+2 district with a very weak incumbent Democrat that basically this is a seat that Donald Trump. A district that Donald Trump won, but the Democrat also won. There's only a handful of those districts. Anyway, it's a winnable seat. If they can find a good candidate, then they're going to go all in and back. So there's a lot of pressure on my shoulders. And so I thought I did pretty good. I got a lot of interest after the meeting. I got a lot of people come up to give me their business card. You know, they loved my background in psychological warfare and how I could translate that into not only a successful political campaign, but also to be successful in Congress, influencing and persuading people, you know, to support conservative values and principles. So I thought I gave a decent presentation. And then Marjorie Taylor Greene, it was her turn. She grabbed the microphone, she got up, and she said, "I'm Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia. I have nearly $1 million already in the bank, and I'm going to take back this seat in Georgia. Who's with me?" And I was like, okay. The room kind of was silent. And then they started asking her some questions. You know, one of the person asked, "Well, you've already raised $1 million. And that's what she kind of was making it to be, because you have to understand that to be considered kind of a legitimate candidate in congressional races and congressional primaries, you have to show that you can raise a little bit of money before these major donors are gonna come in and bundle for you and get behind you. And so basically she was portraying that she had raised $1 million. In reality, and it came out in the questioning that, well, you know, this $1 million is from my private bank account, my net worth. So basically, I'm going to buy a seat, and I need you other rich people to help me buy this seat. And it worked for her, because really that's all they cared about. You know, That seemed to be the number one question that I got everywhere I went, not just Grover Norquist meeting, but every meeting that I had in Washington, D.C. was, you have a great story. You have the great look. You think you can be inspirational, but how much money can you raise? And you know, that's unfortunate, because there's so many good people that would be great in Congress, not myself, but other people that have lots of skills and lots of things to bring to the table, genuine, authentic people who would go for the right reasons, but because they don't have that network of all of these bigwig kingmakers, they don't say the right things or don't do the right things, then they don't get any help at all. Marjorie Taylor Greene has now, she is publicly sworn allegiance to Q, the QAnon conspiracy. She is making a fool out of herself right now in her first week as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. She is being denounced by many people in the party. Senator Ben Sasse just wrote a very good op-ed in The Atlantic, naming her by name and saying this is the cancer that the Republican Party needs to split with if they want to have any chance of ever winning a national election ever again. But that's the way that it works, you know. She had $1 million because she's a wealthy business person, and she bought her way to raise, you know, other, because you have to have money to make money. Just like in business, you have to have money to raise money in to run for Congress. And it was funny how, you know, that this is the people that you need to back you, your policies and your story and who you are. And she didn't bother to say anything about herself except that I have $1 million in the bank ready to spend. I'm going to win this seat. And I'm going to, you know, take back this seat in Georgia. A few weeks or months later, the party shifted her to another district, which that she didn't even live in. But because of the person that she was trying to unseat, and the district was leaning Democrat, and the person that she was going to try to unseat was very popular, and they thought, you probably can't beat her, so let's run you in this district. And she won, and now she's there, and now Twitter has banned her or suspended her, and she is off to the races to see who can be the most nutty far right person in Congress. And I just wanted to, since she's been in the news, to just kind of tell that little snippet of a story about my experiences in that whole world of that back room, you know, power players, kingmakers deciding who is going to be in Congress and who is not. Now, granted, I had a lot of people in that building, in that room, that supported me and that were donating to my campaign. Unfortunately, you know, obviously, the personal things that happened in my life and in my campaign, I suspended, and then obviously later, I publicly denounced the Republican Party, and a lot of those people, probably every single one of them, would never take my phone call again, or you know, whatever. But it was a eye-opening experience. It was kind of a welcome to the big leagues moment, and it was was a fly on the wall at the very origins of Marjorie Taylor Greene and her backing of the far right wing of the Republican Party. And you know, we'll see what happens to her and where her story goes. But she was very nice to me too. Not that that matters, you know. I kind of sound like Donald Trump right now. Like, I'll support anybody who's very nice to me. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it's so odd because these people are very nice people, very intelligent people. And I know that they're just playing a role. They're playing a game. They're stoking this QAnon wing of the party because they're the most exuberant and they're the most
raucous right now, the loudest voices. They have hijacked the party, you know, and so it's a political gamble that people like Ted Cruz have made, and Josh Hawley have made, and Paul Gosar has made, and Andy Biggs has made. And I don't think it's going to work out too great for them that have higher aspirations. You know, Andy Biggs wants to be either a senator or a governor or both at one, you know, and I just don't think he can win a race in Arizona, a statewide race, with the way, I mean, we have two Democrat senators now, and Joe Biden carried the state of the Democrat the first time since 1996. Same in Georgia, where Marjorie Taylor Greene is from. So it's a gamble that is not worth it in my view, but is not really smart either, because we all know that there's more Democrats and there's more independent moderate people than there are far right wing lunatics. And so why go all in on one constituency just because they're the loudest and angriest right now? And they might bring in, because of that anger and grassroots enthusiasm, they might bring in a little bit more campaign funds. I don't know. I don't understand the gamble. I don't understand the all in on that. But like I said, we'll see where all of these people, their political futures either will rise or their fall, or they will fall. You know, I think that just will remain to be seen. Thanks for listening to this short little bonus episode of the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. I'm your host, Chris Taylor. We will see you all later.